The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea.
25 people have died from the coronavirus in just one day in Victoria, making it the highest single-day death toll in this outbreak and the second highest single-day death toll Australia has recorded since the pandemic began. People die every day. It's a fact of life. But before the pandemic, never would we have imagined death cases would be broadcast as part of the daily news cycle. So what is this doing to us? Joining me now is the Chair in Epidemiology at Deakin University, Professor Catherine Bennett. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Now, usually 25 deaths in a day from, say, a bus crash would be plastered everywhere with the names of the victims honoured. We likely won't even know the names of the people who died today in Victoria. What does this say about the reporting around the pandemic?
Well, that's right. This isn't a one-off event, unfortunately. This is something that we know is a risk with infection at these levels in the community, while we still have people who aren't fully vaccinated and the risk that then poses. So I think it's something that, while we're not immune to it, I think everyone still reacts to seeing those numbers. We don't see them reported in the same way for other serious illnesses, for example, including the flu in the middle of the flu season. So it's important, I think, that you know, we keep this in perspective, given that we are seeing 2,000 new cases a day. And I think that's the reality. We're also, though, seeing less cases associated with deaths in Victoria. So in New South Wales, where they didn't reach the same case numbers, thankfully, but they actually saw similar death rates and in fact, reported up to 25 deaths in a day. Our outbreaks happened a month later in Victoria. We've had the benefit of better vaccine protection throughout, and that's actually reduced the number. So even though we've had, you know, 50% more cases on average over this peak period we've just come through, thankfully we aren't seeing a similar proportional high rate of deaths. So 25 deaths is the reality for us, that unfortunately is what happens when you have this many people impacted and still hundreds of people in hospital. But at the same time, this compared to what it would have been had we had this sort of wave when we were not with that vaccination protection, it's a very different story.
Mm. Professor, you mentioned coverage around things like the flu, and that would be reported if it's been a particularly bad flu season. They might say there has been, you know, this number of lives claimed by the flu this season, go get your flu vaccine, that sort of reporting. Do you think to some extent we've become a bit desensitised to these COVID death tolls?
Yeah, and I think there's probably a sense of also that the deaths have been in elderly people. We know that, you know, last year when we had the deaths in Victoria, very focused on the outbreaks that were occurring in aged care. And so it almost became an inevitable consequence that we had very high rates, unfortunately, up to a third of some people who were resident in nursing homes that actually had an outbreak. Had very severe illness, and we saw too many deaths, you know, in those settings. And I think people do see it as a bit more remote. I think actually what's different this time is this is a much bigger mix of people. You know, we have deaths reported in quite young adults, and they're the things, even if we're talking about people with comorbidities, you know, there's still this sort of interest in whether or not people are vaccinated. And so we're looking at the case numbers in very different ways. We're trying to learn about what the outbreak, how it's travelling, but also what the risk is to us. So I think people do have a different kind of interest in cases. It's not something remote now and not something mainly associated with aged care. This is something that's in the community. Mm. So I do think there's a natural interest in it. But at the same time, as you say, it can become about numbers or about vaccination status. And we can forget that there are people at the heart of this and lots of families that are impacted.
Yeah, I think something that you just said then resonated with me, the idea of how this, the coverage and how we think about the pandemic is framed around how we, I guess, assess the risk to us. And I think the perception up to this point has been that, you know, this is something that if you're an elderly person, then you're particularly at risk, which is why I think when there's someone who's, you know, in their early 30s who dies from COVID, that becomes big national news. And, you know, it's announced as the youngest person in Australia to die from COVID. Do you think that there is a tendency from Australians to underestimate that COVID, in particular Delta maybe, can have a sort of a deadly impact on anybody?
Yeah, and thankfully it is rare. But when we have case numbers like this, it's rare becomes real. You know, you will actually see this play out, unfortunately. And with the great protection we have, particularly the people with comorbidity, particularly with the very elderly, very high vaccination rates, they're not contributing in the same way to the hospitalisations as they have in the past. And we're oversampling, if you like, those people unvaccinated who tend to be in the younger adult age groups. So even though they're rare, you're starting to see it because the infection rates, two-thirds of the infections are still being reported amongst people who are fully unvaccinated. So it does mean there's a greater risk in parts of our community where we're not used to seeing serious illness or death associated with infectious diseases like this. So it is a bit of a reality check for people, you know, not to just put this off as something that doesn't matter to them. But we also have to reassure people that it's still rare, but it actually happens. We're seeing less people in hospital per case, which is good. You know, that means the hospitalisation rates come down. But also what we're hearing now is people are in hospital for a shorter period on average, probably also associated with more of the hospitalisations being in younger adults who thankfully can recover from illness or have had one dose, and that helps reduce that serious illness. And we've also had amazing, you know, turnaround in treatment, which is also giving better outcomes. But we can't protect everybody. And I think that's what people need to be aware of. But ultimately, this will transition into the way we manage infectious diseases. It will come off the front page of newspapers, but it's important, as you say, that it's there to signal to people, look, case numbers are going up, or we're seeing more serious illness. And unfortunately, you know, in a bad period, if we get outbreaks that aren't controlled well, that will translate to death still. And that, I think, is ultimately the thing that, you know, really does resonate with all of us as we then realise this is still a serious illness. We do need to keep it under control.
And talking about transitioning, we're seeing states around Australia release their roadmaps for reopening, every state apart from WA, that is. At that point, when it becomes about living with the virus, does the focus have to go from recording case numbers to only recording death, focusing on the deaths instead, or serious hospitalisations?
Well, that will happen with our health department. I think what we usually do with infectious diseases is you have what we call a surveillance system, and they will collect information from a number of sites. It might be still people coming into the country who are screened on arrival with their testing. It'll be people who might still have workplace screening, so worker screening. That's another source of information for health departments. And they will always look at the hospitalisations and deaths associated with a particular infectious agent, you know, as part of their monitoring of disease. That way, if they see any shifts, then they will respond to that. You might have a local outbreak, or we might, you know, as we go into winter, if we start to see a spike in cases across a larger area, they might put in safety measures like please wear masks when you're indoors with people you don't know. So I think it'll be used to monitor what's happening. That's not necessarily saying it's going to appear on the front pages anymore or even be put on a tile on a Twitter feed. You know, it might be that we will move beyond that daily monitoring from a public perspective. But the important thing is that the health department, you know, has that finger on the pulse. They know exactly what's going on, and it fits with our surveillance system so that we have that very close monitoring and we can tell if things are starting to shift in an early response. Preventing it turning into anything larger is the best way to manage any of these infectious diseases, but particularly with these variants like Delta that we've got circulating at the moment.
And in terms of the public, like, what do you think it does to us hearing about these deaths all the time? And, you know, I guess the idea that this level of sort of grief is happening and it's over an elongated period of time, really we're talking like over 18 months now, where we've been seeing a daily kind of record of the people dying of this pandemic. Does that have a kind of a long-lasting impact on us?
Yeah, I think it's, and, you know, this is a whole area of psychology, I'm sure, but I think, you know, what I hear from people, it affects people quite differently. As you say, some, there's a risk they become numb to it, or they don't associate with it. They don't think it's, you know, going to necessarily impact them or their family. I think other people, though, this is actually what's making it hard for people to become comfortable living with the virus in the community, because it is still something that if it's not managed well at a population level, you will still continue to see people in sufficient numbers becoming infected with the virus, that we will still see too many people in ICU and too many people at risk of dying. And I think, you know, we've got to get the balance right. We are going into a transition period which is about keeping the virus under control. And we do want people to be able to, in the eastern states, come out of lockdown safely, but start to live more normal and complete lives. We want our kids back in school and not being disrupted by every single case. It's got to be a different level of confidence living with the virus. So that's the risk, that sometimes, you know, these daily counts actually make people more fearful and less likely to, you know, start to socialise again and get out there and do the things that are progressively becoming open to them again. So we've got to get the balance right. And so that people understand how to manage their own risk, the importance of vaccination to reduce that risk of serious illness. And now with the boosters rolling out, you know, we've got an opportunity for the broader population, once they're made available, if, you know, through a TAGI, that we can actually all do our bit to help reduce transmission that bit further, so that those people who can't be vaccinated or whose vaccinations don't work as well for them are also protected and don't have to stay locked away to stay safe.
I think the message is we're all in it together. A chair in epidemiology at Deakin University, Professor Catherine Bennett, thanks for joining us on The West Live.
Pleasure. Thanks, Ben.